Okay, Esther, she didn't start out great. Mordecai, there was some issues. But they both come to the front now. You know, last time we looked at Esther in chapter 4, you know, look at the end of, I don't know. Yeah, the end of verse 16. You know, she's going to go see the king, right? And she can't, according to the law. But she's going to do it anyway, and if I perish, I perish. She's taking a life in her hand, like we looked at in John 11, you know, Sunday morning. You know, it's when Thomas, they headed to Jerusalem. You don't want to go there, Lord. They were trying to stone you last time we were in town, you know. You know, and so he's like, you know, that's what the Lord has for me right now. That's what he's talking about with, you know, in the, you walk in the light and you can see what's going on. But if you go in the darkness, you're stumbling around. You remember what that's all about? So finally, you know, he's saying, listen, this is where the Lord's leading me. This is the light on my path and this is where we're going. And Thomas, he's like, okay, let's go that we may die with him. You know, I think Thomas takes his life in his hand. I love that about people. And I've said this in the past, and I know I sound like a broken record, and you figure out what's worth dying for, then you know how to live. And I don't think until that point, I don't think that's optional. So she's finally come to the place where, you know, my people, my God and my people are worth dying for. My comfort in the palace, not so much. And now she's starting to live right. She's to a place where she's going to go see the king. And that's where we find ourselves in the first verse in chapter 5. Now, it came to pass on the third day. Is there something significant about the third day? There's always something significant about the third day. There's 3 days of fasting and ostensibly prayer, although it's not mentioned. You know, this probably has to get by a Persian censor, you know, who's checking all this out. So the prayer's not mentioned there, but, you know, I mean, why are they fasting if they're not praying, right? So 3 days later, on the third day, that's always a picture of resurrection. It came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. This is it. Very tense. She's going to die. Well, we read the story. Turns out she doesn't. Now, I saw that movie. I'll say a movie. I hate being critical of people making Bible movies because I like people making Bible movies and telling the story of the Bible. Get it right. There's one where she's walking down the street there going to see the king, and she's in a royal apparel here, and she's going into the palace, and it looks like he's on some steps, and it's like raining sideways, and she's barefoot, right? And so she's walking through the street, and she's like sopping wet, and so she comes up on these like steps there, and she looks like some drowned rat. Am I the only one who saw this movie? It must have made $1 million, because I mean, I'm the only one. Anyway, so like the guy, you know, next in line of the king, he's got his sword out, and he's going to behead her right there, and the king's just like, hey, cool it, you know, that's my wife there. And so he extends the scepter. How unlike our king he is. This one is inapproachable, this king. Our king, oh, very approachable. And so it was when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the courts, she obtained favor in his sight. Anyone have anything? Y'all King James people here. Susan here. She's out in the other room. Anyone get anything besides the phrase obtain favor? Anyone get an idea what that might mean? Huh?
One favor,
obtain favor. You got New King James. We are so stuck in King James. And I'm good with that. I like King James. Listen, how about the word grace? She obtained favor. Grace. She found grace in the eyes of her king. I like that picture right there, okay? She obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in her hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. She's going to see the king on behalf of her people. You know, I'd really hate you to wipe out all 15 million of us. That would be a bad thing. So she goes, and she goes to see the king. Now the king, she obtains favor. So he holds out the golden scepter. You go and you go touch the end of the scepter. It's accepting his invitation to come closer. If this king really doesn't like to be bugged, if you interrupt him, he's doing something important, off with his head and that's it. We got to go find a new queen. Well, it doesn't play out that way. Now, ladies, you guys can go like, you know, count, you know, light fixtures, something. I'm talking to ladies right now. The ones who are married, this is the deal. God has put you in a place where you can really be a help to your husband to guide him on the right path. This husband here, he's derelict in his duties. He's going to kill 15 million people. That's probably not so good to do, right? So she can be a godly influence on this man with the right attitude. Now she comes to him, she's wearing the royal garments. She doesn't, that's why I got kind of a little bit talked about the movie, because it's almost like, you know, what was she going for, like, drown rat, please, you know, be, I'm so pitiful looking, please take pity on me. She's doing this according to what is prescribed, and this is the way you approach the king. See, you remember the first queen, Vashti, she got kicked out for what? Because the king said, hey, show up, and she said no. She didn't do according to protocol, whatever that drunken slob wanted. And I'm not saying it was a good reason to get rid of his queen, but that's what happened. So she's being very respectful. You want to get your husband's ear at all, you got to come respectful. The old arms across the chest, hands on the hips, like, you know, you're in a heap of trouble now, mister. Anything with that attitude, I don't care what you're saying, he's not going to have, he won't have it. He won't have it. One of the things, like, for a long season, and it took me a long while to get there. It took me a long while to get here, okay? Where Susan, I see a lot of people going to her and talking to her and asking her opinions, so I can think, she's pretty wise. And God gave it to me to help me. Now, it's a hard thing for a guy to say, yeah, I need help, and yeah, you can speak into my life, and because we're knuckleheads. We don't accept that very well. But when I finally, you know, and so I said, okay, I'll let her speak in my life. I'll let her talk to me. I'll let her tell me what. But it always comes to a place where I have to believe she's my friend and she wants what's best for me. If we start bumping heads and it's all nuclear and I feel it's all adversarial, I don't care what she tells me. It's never going to end up in a good place. It can't. That's doesn't really happen in my house very often. I mean, really, she wants what's best for us, what's best for me, and so, like, when she speaks in my life in that very respectful way, it's generally well received. But we like everybody else, we stumbled and bumbled and fiddled and diddled and got it all wrong and messed it up 117 million times. And then the second month it was a little better, but you know, but we finally learned how to, you know, to talk to each other in a way that we could, you know, listen to what the other person was saying. I think this is that. And it's a small point, but I want to make it because she's approaching the king. You know, if she has this attitude, 15 million people are going to die. You know what I mean? If she starts, you know, who do you think you are? You think you're going to, you know, it's like, that can't go well. So she obtains favor. The queen, and then the king said to her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther, verse 3? What is thy request? It shall be given thee to the half of the kingdom. You remember when Herod says that, when that bimbo's dancing for him, you know. And she says, all right, I want John the Baptist's head on a platter, you know. Remember that? That's the same thing. But this is just, that's just the style. He's not saying, yeah, I'll give you, you know, my kingdom's, you know, 200 million square miles. You can have 100 million square miles. He's not saying that. He's not really saying that. He's being magnanimous. He's saying anything you want, up to half the kingdom. Basically, he's saying, you get a blank check. I like you. You're a good kid. Does he love her like a wife? Listen, you remember last chapter, he hadn't seen her in over a month. What kind of marriage is that? Well, it's a kingly marriage. He's got a whole harem, so it's, you know, it's not her turn this month. So that's just the way it is. It's not like they're real close and they're kindred spirits. And listen, they've been married for over 5 years this time. He doesn't even know her nationality. Or her, what deity or deities she worships. I mean, think about it. How close are they, right? What do you want? Up to half the kingdom. You know, he's being magnanimous. It's public. He's already extended the scepter to her, right? So now he's, you know, playing it up for everybody. And Esther answered, if it seemed good unto the king. It's very respectful language. You know, I won't do anything to displease you, honey. If it seems good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. The king said, cause Haman to make haste that he may do as Esther has said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared because he promised now he's going to deliver on the goods. And there's, you know, alcohol at the banquet. He'll be fine. You know what I mean? So a lot of banqueting at this in this book, isn't there? And there's always decisions made. The banquets are kind of like, if you go from banquet to banquet, it's almost like, you know, the scene one, scene two. So if you've tracked through it that way, it's almost like you could. And then, of course, each banquet, like really important things happen at them. I know it's a small point. You guys aren't even reading it like that. I know you don't, and I don't, you know, say too much stuff like that. But, you know, when I see things, I kind of like to bring them up sometimes. So another banquet's involved. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? It shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? Even a half the kingdom, it shall be performed. It's still, the only ones eating are Haman and the king and the queen, but don't think it's like in a little private closet somewhere. It's still very public, okay? And he's still being all very magnanimous. Now, why does he say this? Anything you want, up to half the kingdom. Didn't she already get a request when she said come to the banquet? Now, he's saying this. Look, honey. Look there, sunshine. I know you didn't take your life in your own hands to throw a picnic for me and Haman. This is good. He's like getting a little bit of a clue. I never said he was, I'm saying he's worthless morality-wise. I'm saying he's, even though she respects him, I don't think he's a respectable person. And by the way, when I'm talking about that, that's a very key thing. Because I was saying, like, she approaches him, you know, with courtesy, with respect, with civility. In counseling and talking with couples, the wife will say, well, he's not very respectable. That's what I get. That's maybe true. That may be true. He's not respectable. I think, you know, it seems to me that treat somebody with respect, whether respectable or not, it'll still go better. And then, of course, it gives him the opportunity to become respectable. Because, I mean, you could, this is what a couple happens, you know. Well, he doesn't love me. She doesn't respect me. And there they are, and they're at loggerheads, and no one's going to make the first move ever, and let's just get the lawyers involved at some point, because it's never going to end up good, right? Why should I be the first to change is kind of the idea. Well, I don't know. I think, you know, both people need to change at the same time, but, you know, if it comes right down to it, man's the leader, right? Lead, go first guy. And then whoever makes a move, if I fix my half of the marriage, you know, I could be married to a shrew. I'm not. I'm married to a wonderful woman, but she could be horrible, but if I'm really a great husband, half our marriage, we're 50% there. I mean, think about it. So I want to change this so at least we're halfway home. If she ever gets on board, well, then it's going to be wonderful, right? I mean, I'm talking about my marriage. I'm talking about our marriage in general. So she's treating him respectable. She's still doing that. But he's thinking like, okay, I know this much. I know that you didn't almost die this morning just so we could have dinner. What is it all about here? What do you want? What is it that you've taking your life into your hand to come into my presence. He knows the rules. He made the rules, right? So he's got to be like super surprised when she shows up. Okay, well, if it please the king, let's have dinner. Okay, we're having dinner. Okay, what's it really all about? Up to half my kingdom. I didn't. So he's still being magnanimous and all this stuff. Then he answered Esther and said, my petition, my request is, there's a semicolon there in my Bible, and you can almost like hear, you know, a little bit of like a drum roll. Okay, this is it. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition, to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said. You're going out on a limb there, sunshine. What is she doing? Is she just piquing his interest? Is she just saying, listen, I got to check in my spirit. It ain't quite right. She doesn't want to just all the emotion, all the drama, all the dreck, all the stuff. It's not even dreck. I mean, it's really important stuff, but maybe it's just not the right time. I don't understand this extra day. I don't know anything about this. Is this out of cowardice? Is this out of like, you know, she's praying and the Lord says, you know, you better wait another day? I don't know. You know, again, we supply the commentary. The scripture itself is a pretty straightforward account. So what's this all about? I don't know. Now, I know this, the guy. He's definitely curious. He's hooked. Okay, he wants to know how this is going to play out. Well, another feast. All right. I'll play that. Yeah. All right. If that's what you want to do, you know. Then when Haman fought. Now this is very important to the story. If all this unfolds here, this wouldn't happen. So it's important that it played out this way. And I have an idea. I'm going to give Esther the benefit of the doubt. Because I think she's really come to the front spiritually. I think she's ready to die for the cause, for the Lord and for the cause of her people. So what I think is, I think she gets a check in her spirit. I think what the Lord's saying, listen, I got some stuff. There's got to be like a gallows built. There's got to be like some stuff happen. He's got to go home and brag to his wife and his friends. We need some more stuff to happen. And this is what's going to play out in these next couple chapters before the next feast. And then went Haman forth that day, joyful with a glad heart. When Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Most important day in Haman's life. It just went from first to worst, like right now. He sees that rock in his shoe that is Mordecai, and he's happy. He's whistling a happy song. He goes up the gate, sees Mordecai, and he's singing a dirge. He's got his face all in the mud. He's all bummed out. He's just, what happened, Mordecai? Haman, you were living large. Everything was good. You see, one guy, he won't bow to you. You know what this is? This is Haman. This is a character study in who he is. Esther, fearless, courageous, humble. Haman, proud. It's all about what people think. It's all about what people think. You better be afraid of me because the king said you better be afraid of me. When I come around, people bow. That's just the way it is. Well, we have one guy who's not bowing and he just can't get over it. Now listen, think about this in your life, right? You're the second in command in the biggest country in the whole wide world, the biggest kingdom, and you are like the king's right-hand man. The queen invited you to a banquet, and only you and the king were there. This isn't like some, you know, heads of state, you know, 3,000 people on this table a mile and a half long. It's the king, the queen, and you, okay? You're the most powerful guy other than the king in the whole land. People bow every time they see you. They honor you. And there's one guy who won't get on board, and that's the only thing you can focus on. Is that just a little bit crazy? This is his problem. It's idolatry. His idol is what everybody perceives him to be. That's the whole thing. And what Mordecai is doing is attacking his idol. That's why it's such a big, important issue. Listen, people come and say, oh, you know, that really blessed me. That was a wonderful study. Until I attack your sacred cow and then watch. Oh, then the fireworks will start happening. If you have a non-touch or non-negotiable, and I start hinting around the fringes of that and I start, you know, beating up on, oh, my goodness. Oh, I didn't know it's long enough to see that. How is it that you don't generally do that? Because if you worship God, I'm pro-God. If you love Jesus, I'm very all about Jesus. If you're about anything else, eventually I'm going to get around to beating that up because it's a lesser God and you shouldn't be serving that God. And that's just it. So when I'm on that, then that's where I get the attacks. But if you're all about Jesus and I'm all about Jesus, we'll get along fine. You see what I'm saying? And even if you don't agree with me all the time, you say, he means well, you know. And it's generally, it goes okay. But as long as I don't, like, again, you know, when I go to sacrifice your sacred cow and you have something that's I'm here and no father kind of, and it makes some good fireworks. But it doesn't matter because, you know, first to last, I got to say what I got to say. So it doesn't, you know what I mean? I don't, but he's all about this. And so look at the rest of the story. It's very comical. And God has a sense of humor. Look at these verses. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. He's got friends. That's remarkable. So he refrained himself, means he didn't do any bodily harm to Mordecai, but he's got smoke coming out of his ears. And Haman told him all the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things which the king had promoted him and how he advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. This guy's a blowhard. Is he got pride? Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit. Now, that's the problem. He's got two problems, two severe problems as I see them, right? He doesn't worship the God of the Bible, and he's trying to attack his people, and God definitely notices him. Now, the other issue is he got pride, and what do we know about pride? Only 100% of the time, God, help me out, I can't remember the verse, God resists the proud, that's right, and gives grace to the humble. That's automatic. Only all the time. Only 100% of the time. When I have pride in my life, which is pretty often, when I have unchecked pride in my life, it's like turning off a spigot. That's the end of the blessing. Every time. God resists the proud. Can I get me some glory here, Adam, or is it all about you? Well, if it's all about you, have at it. If it's all about me, I mean, that's a different, you know what I mean? And by the way, I was thinking about that over the course of the week. I don't know where when I first started thinking about it. I thought I was thinking about, like, how do we know the will of God in any given situation? What will bring the most glory, or who will get the glory, I guess is the idea. And then, if it's glory and glory, where does God get the most glory? And then the decision's made. I was thinking about it. Listen, me and my wife were having an argument. Well, if I try to go and, let's say, and I was wrong, if I go and humble myself and apologize to her, would that bring God the glory? Or if I just say, over my dead body, which one's going to give God the most glory? Easy decision, right? Or whatever it is, if you put that in that situation, which one of these choices that I make, this or this, is going to give God the glory? And then I think the decision's made for us. Because a lot of times we're wondering, well, should I do this? Where's the glory going? Just an idea. So he's all proud. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yay, look at me. Look at all my kids. Look at all my wealth. Look at all my fame. Look at all my glory. Look at all my... He's the president of his own fan club. Yet all this availeth me nothing. So long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. I should be having the time of my life and I can't even enjoy it because of that Mordecai. Wow. Is that crazy? Like, you think like, idiot, I don't care about you. You know, king thinks I'm some wonderful. Does that really, if you're in that situation, does that really get to you that much? Again, it's an idol, a worship problem, and I think that's the whole problem. All this avails me nothing. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow, that's 75 feet. That's a big gallows. And again, gallows, we think Old West, platform, trap door, noose, nothing like that. They're talking about, it's a precursor to, it's crucifixion or it's precursor, some impaling device is what they're talking about. Persians invented that, okay? And at about this time. We're not sure if he's going to be crucified on the gallows or impaled on the gallows. People debate that. Would you rather be impaled on a 75-foot-high gallows or crucified to it? Well, see, none of the above. You know what I mean? So you can argue it all you want, but it's still unpleasant no matter what happens, I guess, so let the people debate it, but I'm just thinking, like, it's a nasty way to die. So they're thinking, okay, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high tomorrow. Speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. And the word hang means, like, stuck to it, impaled on it. Again, crucified or impale, well, I'm not exactly sure. Then go thou merrily with the king into the banquet. Yeah, once we impale this guy on a 75, I don't know, have a good dinner after that. And go merrily, you know. With the king under the banquet, and the thing pleased him, and he caused the gallows to be made. Honey, what a great idea. Now, she's not being very a godly help, is she? She's expending all her influence on her husband for less than honorable, So that's where we are there. Now, chapter 6. Let's Let's go. On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of the record of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now that will cure anyone's insomnia. Did he know that? He's trying to, or he's just figuring, I'm up all night anyway. Let's take care of some, you know, official business and get some government work done. Who knows? But this is God working behind the scenes. Isn't God's name isn't mentioned in this whole book. And it's rife with all that. Listen, when God's working your life and is in behind the scenes, we call it providence, okay? It's God. That's what's happening here. God's given this king, you know, divine insomnia. Hey, king, why don't you go read the Chronicles? I think I'll go read the Chronicles. Listen, God's driving here, and you know why? Because look what's happening here. It was found written that Mordecai, verse 2, had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. Remember that? And the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there is nothing done for him. Uh-oh, that is against protocol. He saved my life, and I didn't even do anything? We gotta fix that. If nothing else, you know, it's just a pride issue, but still, be that as it may, it's still an issue. And the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman standeth in the king. And the king said, let him come in. Oh, good, Haman's here. Now, he'll help me out on this. Do you see God's fingerprints all over this? This stuff can't happen by coincidence. And by the way, our Jewish friends will tell us, coincidence is not a kosher word, okay? None of this stuff is coincidental. This is all going by God's driving, God's design, God's in charge here. So he's got this gallows. Yeah, let's hang Haman on the gallows. That's why he's there to see the king. The king says, I got a good use for him. Let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Mordecai. He doesn't say that, though, does he? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight in to honor more than to myself? This man's ego is incredible, is it? Isn't it? Isn't this like... So the rest that works out is it's comedic. It's just funny to me. Now, if he knows that this is for Mordecai, what's he going to tell the king? But he thinks it's for himself. I'm thinking when he finds out it's for Mordecai, he's going to blow a gasket. But he's got to do what the king told him to do, right? Who would the king delight to honor more than me? Well, as long as we're asking for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought with the king, which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth on, and the crown royal is set upon his head. I mean, as long as it's hypothetical, king, you know, if you really want to honor this guy, you know, your royal robes, your crown, the horse that you ride, that would be a nice start, right? And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city. We want a one-man parade here. That's what we want. And let him proclaim before him, this most noble prince, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Then the king said to Haman, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? It's terrific. Do it. Make haste. Take the apparel of the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. He's thinking, okay, let's get Mordecai crucified, and Mordecai is not getting crucified today. Okay? God in control. Listen, is this kind of important? Can you make the obvious connections? Connect all the dots so you're not... Bad stuff is determined upon you. Your fate is sealed. This Haman Satan character, your demise is imminent. Well, you better check with headquarters before you start, buying coffins and planning my funeral, because guess what? My father is the sovereign of the whole universe, and nothing's escaping his notice. You're trying to crucify me. Well, he's going to exalt me. You're trying to impale me on the 75-foot gallows. Well, God hasn't voted on that yet. What's going on in your life? Good things? Really good things? Great. Bad things? Really bad things? Struggle right now? Listen, I got to tell you something about your Heavenly Father that you may or may not know. He loves you, desperately loves you. Nothing is escaping his notice. You may be on somebody's hit list, earmarked for destruction, check mark next to your name, crucifixion. But if it's not God's list, what are we worried about? I mean, really? Then the king said to Haman, make haste, take the apparel of the horse, do so to Mordecai that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. That's a king's order. You don't want to go back on that. How much enthusiasm does our boy Haman have for this job? Not so much, but he can't not do it. One, it was his idea, right? Two, the king gave an order. I don't think this guy, this king doesn't like his orders countermanded. Just talk to Vashti about that. Then took Haman the apparel, the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. That's just comical. Now, you know what I see in Haman? Haman wants to be like his king. He wants to wear his crown. He wants to wear his apparel. He wants to ride on his horse. He wants to be in the only person in the parade, like the king, like everyone honors him. I don't see that as a really desperately bad thing, except he's got the wrong king. Now, if you want to be like your king, have at it. Have at it if you get the right king. Because I think this is the whole thing. It's a worship issue. Haman's just clueless about the God of the universe and the people of God. And it's all about him and self-aggrandizement and self-promotion and self-glorification. And now, Mordecai's an interesting character here. He's got this done upon him. So he doesn't stand for Haman. So out comes Haman. He's got all this, like, you know, the horse he's leading. He's got the royal apparel. He's got the crown, stuff like this. Okay, stand up, you. You know, he's putting all the stuff on him, getting him on the horse. Does Mordecai like this? Would you like this? Because I think this is a little over the top. I don't care how much of an egomaniac I am. I guess I'm an egomaniac in different ways. This wouldn't appeal to me. This would be a little bit embarrassing, okay? You know, I'm the only float in a one-man parade, and I get some herald in front of me saying, this is what happens to the man the king wants to honor. Would you get excited about this? Because I can't really see it. I don't think Mordecai's excited, because I think Mordecai wants to be like his king, which isn't like this at all. You see what I'm saying? It's not. I think Mordecai arrives at a place where he's a godly man, so he's getting very humble. I think this would be very embarrassing to him. But it doesn't say again. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate. So after it's all over, Mordecai goes back to work. What do you do after a day like today? Well, I still got a couple hours left. I might as well clock in. So off he goes back to work, back to the king's gate, right? He's a government official. He's at the king's gate. What happens to our old buddy Haman? But Haman hastened to his house mourning and having his head covered. He is so shamefaced. Everyone saw me. I'm like the king's right-hand man, and I'm tugging this hated Mordecai through the streets, heralding in front of him, this is what the king wants to do to that the guy he wants to honor. Mordecai is shamefaced. He's got his head covered and he's mourning. Because somebody just kicked his God square in the teeth. His sacred cow was sacrificed. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men, I don't even know what to say about wise men there. Are they wise because they agree with him? If you're that kind of guy or that kind of girl, male or female, if you surround yourself with people who tell you what you want to hear, they're not wise, all right? And you're not wise for setting yourself up that way. I need people who need around me. It works out best when they can tell me stuff, people who aren't intimidated by me at all, who can just, this is the way it is, you know. Then my life works out better. I don't want like people like rubber stamp my dumb ideas or, you know what I mean? I need people who can, and that's generally how it is, you know, I will say that too. So he's got these wise men and his wife, Zeresh, his wife. They said to him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews before whom thou hast begun to fall, Zeresh really is being helpful. She really is. Look at it. If he's Jewish, and you've begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. Oh, you don't believe it? Go talk to Pharaoh. Listen, there's a whole, everyone who's, you know, threatened extinction of the Jews have lived to be pallbearers at their funeral. Haman, you might want to back up. What happens here, I know it's all funny, and Haman gets his comeuppance, but I think in this, don't lose sight of this, God is reaching out to Haman. He gives him a chance to repent. Haman, listen, you should do some serious backpedaling. You should repent in the biggest, worst way that anyone has ever repented. No sign of that. This man is very, very static to this whole thing. At the beginning, he's a bad guy. In the middle, he's a bad guy. And he dies a bad guy. And God just fired a warning shot across his bow. Don't mess with my people. That's not going to go well. You want to rethink that, Haman? You want to recalculate? And Zeresh, his wife, says, he's Jewish. That's probably not a really good idea to mess with him. I think she's really being helpful. Does he take that counsel? There's no hint of it at all. And while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains and hasted to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther had prepared. Now look at, that's kind of like ominous forewarning here. Tune in next week. You know, that's the cliffhanger verse there that, you know, is going to bring us all back. Again, there's no cliffhanger verses. There's no chapter divisions in the original, but we're going to stop there anyway just because it's the end of a chapter. This is one of my... hard book to teach, but it's really fun to read and to study. And hey, come up with some, you want to do some like homework? Don't write it down. I don't want to see it. Don't pass it any, but how am I like Haman? Not me. I mean, I wrestle with that my own self. How am I like Haman? What's God trying to teach us through this all? When Haman gets hung on the gallows. I don't give the whole end away, but I'm trusting this isn't our first big barbecue, right? We've read the book before. When Haman's hung on his own gallows, how do you feel about that? I mean, think about it. How do you feel about that? Yay! God taking out the trash. Good riddance to bad garbage. Yeah, just justice. Really? Think about it. Again, we're not answering. There's no show of hands or anything like that. How do you feel when Osama died? Was taken out. No, just a thought. You know what I mean? Who would you like to see hung on a 75-foot gallows, or any gallows? I mean, You know, I wrestle with these things. I think about these things. And I'm like, you know, heart check. Because my first, you know, the reason I'm asking these questions is I'm reading through. I'm getting ready. I'm going to teach you stuff. Haman, yeah. Well, you know, the guy who rolls a stone, it rolls back on. The guy who digs a pit, he falls in it. You know, God not only, you know, pays you back, but pays you back in kind. Pharaoh says, hey, I got a great idea. Let's throw all the little baby boys into the Nile River, right? And him and his whole army is drowned in the Red Sea. Not only does it come back on your head, it comes back the same way. But that's what Jesus said. The measurement you mete out, that's the measurement that's going to come back on you. So, well, I want to build a 75-foot gallows. Say, okay, Mordecai, you mess with me? You know, do you know who I am? Mordecai's, well, I guess you're Haman, but you know who my God is. And he ends up being hung on the own gallows that he built. That's justice. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about justice in general? Because I read this and I was thinking, yeah, all right, mess with God's people. And I was thinking, like, wait a second, is that a Christian thought? Is that a really good Calvary Chapel pastor idea? And I kind of wrestle with these things, you know, so I shouldn't be the only one wrestling. Let's stand and pray, and Matt will send us out of here in song. Good word, Lord. Your word is terrific, and it challenges us. It speaks to our heart. It says, we want to do right. We want to think right. We want to be humble. We see that you resist the proud. We see that, you know, the things that we plot come back on our own heads. But we see also, Lord, that the sowing and reaping is the rule that you've put in place is also a good thing. As we love, as we forgive, as we sow those things, Lord, as we sow kindness, as we sow, you know, gentleness, Lord, those things come back on us too, and we praise and thank you so much for that. So, Lord, you know, instruct us through this book and tell us the things you want us to know. To the end that we would do them, we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.